Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Director, Deputy Director. My name's Dave Ware. I'm a Game Division Manager for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and today we're going to talk about kind of a guidance document for the department, for the Game Division at least, dealing with the Game Management Plan. First, I want to just walk through the process of developing the plan and make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of where we're headed. So the Game Management Plan was actually developed, the first EIS was developed back in 2002, and that first plan ran 6 years, which coincides with 2 3-year hunting season packages. It is the, as I mentioned, the guiding document for the management of hunted species. We do go through a CEPA process. This is the second supplemental environmental impact statement that we've done. We updated the plan back in 2008, and now we're looking to update the plan for 2015 to 21. We have gone through quite a process, and I'll describe that here in a minute in terms of the public process associated with developing this plan. We've just completed the first draft update and a public review of that. That will result in the final draft of the Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement, and then we'll bring that to the Commission for approval of the plan itself. So specifically the SEIS or the Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement will be completed later this month, having gone through that formal process. But the Game Management Plan document is still open to amendment. And so we will be continuing to edit the document. As you heard, there has been some frustration expressed about the timeline and the involvement in the plan, at least here with the draft of the plan, and so we are going to continue to work on that. We may not be ready for bringing this back to you for adoption at the September meeting, but hope to get that back to you before the end of the year, and of course, and ask for your adoption. So in drafting the plan, essentially it's an update, and so we go back and we look at the previous plan and we remove items that have already been completed or that are no longer priorities. We address issues through a scoping process for what people want to see in the updated plan, and then we have some other steps as well in terms of public process. But first I want to walk through the scoping and what we did with in developing that scoping. So we start with agency staff and the Game Management Advisory Council asking what have you been hearing, what kinds of things do you think we need to be addressing, and we kind of develop a list of that. We put that out on the internet and do a public survey and ask for folks to weigh in, tell us what they think of the issues that we've identified in terms of priorities, but also if they've got any additional ideas. And during that scoping survey, we received over 8,000 individual responses, and many of those, over 5,000 of those, also provided thousands of individual comments. So pretty extensive process. And what they told us were some of the top issues for them, and you'll see some very common themes through the rest of this presentation on those issues, because through each step of the public process, it was reiterated essentially that these are the priorities for the public. And so predator impacts, wolf issues, elk issues, lots of things continue to be big issues. And I think we had enough of them that everybody will find their favorite issue in the top responses. All the way to, we did get some small game stuff, which seldom occurs as a top response, but we did get one in there with waterfowl harvest, and obviously you addressed that yesterday with liberal seasons on waterfowl. So the next step that we did is we developed and conducted a general public opinion survey. And so a lot of times when you go through public processes, especially with public meetings and providing opportunities for comment, oftentimes you hear from those folks that are most concerned about certain issues or strongly supporting certain issues, but maybe not get a broad view of what the broader public thinks. And so we conducted a general public opinion survey, and we're actually just about to complete a Hunter survey as well. But in terms of the results of the general public opinion survey, again, it's a survey of the Washington citizens as a whole, and asking them a variety of questions that we've refined based on the previous public processes. We do the Hunter survey, as I suggested, mainly looking at satisfaction levels and some of the details of what they'd like to see us address. And as I said, additional ways of collecting and understanding what the public would like us to do are combined with public meetings and all the other ways that we collect information. So some of the things that we took out and asked the general public had to do with relative support for hunting. This is something we've done each year of the update of the game management plan to see if we're on track, to see if we're managing the way that the public would like us to. Because of the transfer of wildlife conflict program into the wildlife program, we had a lot of questions about that. Some of those were follow-up to questions that we had conducted back in 2002 as well. And then, of course, wanting to deal with some of the top priorities during the scoping process, predator management and wolf management, we asked a lot of questions about that. And then we also asked about some participation in outdoor recreation type questions that have to do with hunter recruitment, retention, and reactivation. The results were: the majority of Washington residents support hunting. This is actually a small increase from what we had seen previously. It's gone from about 82% to 88%. The relative levels of support varied by reason, and some of those are on this slide, but a lot of the rationale for support for hunting has to do with basically wildlife management, and so preventing spread of disease, preventing damage to habitat were some of the higher supported rationale or reasons for hunting, and the lowest that we asked though was still at 60%, which was to prevent auto collisions. In terms of wildlife conflict, over a quarter of Washington citizens reported having a conflict with wildlife in the last 2 years. And when we asked, about 17% of those had contacted WDFW. That would be about 300,000 contacts based on the population of the state of Washington. And I'm not sure that all of those called us on the phone, but obviously we've got a lot of information on the web and personal contacts as well. And the rating of WDFW's response was pretty good. 51% said that their interaction with the department on those conflict issues was good or excellent, and only 6% said poor, although 33% said they don't know. And in addition, 71% didn't know much about our wildlife conflict program. So they were pretty nice to us in terms of the response, but probably didn't have a lot of information about wildlife conflict and how we manage that. When we asked what kinds of wildlife have caused problems for you, deer and raccoons were number one and two, but bears, not surprisingly, were the third highest reported conflict. And so most of those conflicts were associated with garbage, structural damage, trees, including industrial timberlands, and gardens. There was very limited support for killing black bears due to timber damage. We'd heard that before. We've been trying to manage the program so that it would fit a little better into the public's opinions. And one of those issues was that hunters are the preferred way of addressing timber damage. On predator management, there was strong support for maintaining sustainable predator populations, but also strong support for reducing predator populations to increase suppressed deer or elk herds. There's also strong support for reducing predators to protect listed species, and it's split for preventing loss of domestic animals. Sometimes in this predator management is going to be an interesting, challenging management issue for the department, because when you ask these kinds of questions to the public, you'll see slightly different answers depending on which questions you ask and how you ask them. And so that's why it's very important for us to consider a lot of different types of public input before we make management decisions. In terms of wolf management, there continues to be good support for wolf recovery, 64% versus 27% opposed. That's actually quite a significant decline from previous support for wolf management, which was at about 75%. There's even better support for delisting wolves once they meet recovery objectives. And although one of the questions that we asked, again, was what do you think of the department's management of wolves? And a big majority of the answers, over 50%, were they weren't sure how to rate the department's management of wolves. There was a couple of other, I think, key pieces in here in terms of the survey that I think are worth noting. Some of that decline in overall public support appears to be from those areas that actually have wolves. So we did look at different parts of the state and the relative support in those different areas. And I think that a lot of that has driven the decline, although even in Western Washington, we have seen a decline in the relative level of support, which doesn't have wolves at this point, but also tends to be more supportive of wolves and wolf recovery than other parts of the state. In terms of some very specific issues, we asked, what do you think about the department using cost share funding for prevention of wolf problems, wolf conflicts? Strong support there. What do you think about the department using lethal control? Again, strong support there. It drops a little bit for lethal control to protect ungulates, but still a majority support that activity. Some more issues in terms of wolf management. We asked about concerns about impacts that wolves might have after they're recovered, and elk populations. A lot of folks expressed concerns about what's going to happen with elk populations. I think a lot of that is information that they've gleaned from other states, adjacent states, in terms of what some local declines that have occurred there. But even bigger concern about the livestock and impacts to the livestock community. In terms of hunting after recovery, there was pretty good support for establishing a hunting season, 63% versus 28%. Good support for maintaining wolf population objectives as a reason for supporting the hunting season. And actually, you see that even went up higher than the first response. So 69% would support hunting seasons to maintain wolf population objectives. There was the one that was probably the lowest is, would you support a hunting season to provide recreation? And there was no support. As you can see, there was very limited support for hunting for that purpose, hunting wolves for that purpose. And then good support for trying to address impacts to prey species and try to address impacts to livestock attacks. We asked a few questions about participation in the outdoors, again associated with recruitment and retention. And a majority of Washington residents enjoy the outdoors, with over 57% suggesting that they'd gone hiking in the last 2 years. You know, Washington is known as a very outdoor state, and lots of our residents take advantage of that. 47% said that they participated in wildlife viewing in the last 2 years, 45% in camping, and here's a little bit of a surprise with 42% talking about fishing I did the numbers on that, and that's a lot more than the licenses we sell. And I think there are some issues there with on the hunting side as well. So I think lots of folks, and one of the things that the folks that did the surveys for us, the contractor, one of the things that they suggested is that people probably check the box or say yes, they participated in fishing because they just went along. They didn't buy a license and fish themselves or hunt themselves, but they may have just gone along with those folks. This next bullet is a big number. Over three quarters indicated that they hunted on state lands in the past 2 years. So out of the 43 million acres of uplands in the state of Washington, state lands comprise about 5 million acres. So you can see that the interest and the demand for recreation on public lands, especially state lands, is very, very high. And then the last one is that a third reported hunting at some time in their lives. And again, this statistic is fairly high compared to what we see in terms of hunter license sales. So when talking about interest in hunting, we also were trying to figure out, who might be interested in that. And 48% of the public that we interviewed said they're just not interested. For a lot of reasons, a variety of reasons, they just weren't interested in hunting. 13% said they might consider it. They might consider going hunting. And those are big numbers, obviously, when you think about the state of Washington nearing 7 million residents. 20% said they're current hunters. And even at that, obviously, we don't sell that many licenses, but we also know that some hunters hunt one out of 3 years, one out of 5 years, and so when you start adding those up, the numbers get a little larger than they might be. 13% said they hunted in the past, but they no longer hunt. So those start to give us a lot of ideas. You've heard, and you heard even this morning that interest in hunting has declined over time, and it certainly has. At least the number of people who regularly hunt has certainly declined over in recent times. But there's still a lot of interest in it, and I think that translates to a lot of support for it. So we completed the general public opinion survey. We drafted the plan, sent it out for public review, and here's what we heard were the major issues. As I said, these themes are fairly continuous through the public process: predator pain management, wolf management, recruit, retain, and reactivate hunters, non-toxic ammunition, hunter access, human-wildlife conflict, continues to be a big issue. Disease, especially hoof disease, you heard about that yesterday. Baiting of deer and elk has risen to the one of the top issues. Different types of hunting equipment and hunting technology are also big issues, and you heard a little bit about that this morning as well. And then the introduction to pronghorn, or supporting the recolonization and introduction of pronghorns, is still an issue out there. So when we drafted the plan, we looked at, and this is the first time that we've seen this in the plan, but we've created basically a set of guidelines for how we would address predator prey management. The first time trying to be more proactive in terms of how we deal with that. Within that guidelines, we identified that we need to see documented impacts from predators. It lays out a process for us to consider an action, has a lot of elements associated with how we would consider that, includes public outreach, making sure that folks understand that we are, or if we're planning on moving forward with a management action, and then of course monitor our effectiveness and make sure that what we've done has been effective in terms of achieving our objectives. In terms of wolf management, we really boils down to two things. We're continuing to implement the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan for recovery of wolves, and there's a lot of pieces of that had come up in the public process, but most of those are all addressed already in the plan. But the one new strategy that we suggested is that we need to develop a wolf management plan for when wolves are no longer listed, and it lays out a process, a public process, including a CEPA review for how we would do that. Hunter recruitment, retention, and reactivation. This started out as hunter recruitment and retention, but the reactivation is an important piece, as we noted from the survey, the public's opinion survey that we did. In this section of the plan, we talk about developing a working group, and we've actually already formed that group or started to form that group. And we're going to have a workshop in September or October time frame. We've got some folks, nationally renowned folks, that have been working on this issue on a nationwide basis. They're going to come talk to us about the things that have been successful in other states and that they think are most effective. That'll help us expand on current ideas and help us set priorities for where we would want to dive into, and then we develop and implement a strategic plan for making that happen. Non-toxic ammunition. The plan calls for developing and relies heavily on voluntary programs to reduce the use of lead. Although we also recognize that there are going to be areas where we will identify situations where lead is problematic and we need to address those, and so that's also in there. Talks a lot about expanding the outreach regarding the issue to make sure that everybody's on the same page in terms of the impacts of lead. Hunter access, you see the number one strategy there had to do with outreach. One of the things that became very apparent is that we've been expanding this program fairly significantly and was identified as a priority in past plans, but we're not letting the public know well enough, at least what we've done and what's available for them. And so outreach is going to continue to be a big piece of our Hunter access program in the future. We're still looking for additional funding. We have been very successful with some federal grants and use of Pittman-Robertson funds, that's excise tax on sporting equipment to expand that program. We think we have some greater needs, especially associated, I'll talk a little bit about this as well later in this presentation, but we have a real need for working with industrial timberland owners in Western Washington to address their needs for managing hunters on their property, and so that's why we continue to look and seek additional funding. There is another federal grant program out there that it's called the Voluntary Public Access Program. It's associated with the Farm Bill. We recently applied for a grant through that source and were denied, they had $20 million available nationwide, and in their first go around, they're going to start another round of grant applications for the other $20 million that's available. So we hope to be a little more competitive in that next round. We're looking to work even harder at coupling hunter access with our conflict resolution for folks. We've identified that we need to look at greater incentives for landowners to get them interested in our programs. We've got quite a bit of interest and success in the agricultural community in eastern Washington and in some of the waterfowl areas up in the Skagit and Chehalis, but also in eastern Washington. And so we're really looking to try to focus more attention on the industrial timber owners and trying to provide some incentives that might get them interested. Another piece of that, and something that has come up, it had come up in the past, but is even more important now with more landowners going into fee access programs, is that there's quite a bit of landlocked public lands within some of those fee access programs, and control of access to that. And so, the first step at trying to identify the scope of that issue is to get an inventory on it. So we're looking at doing that. We did start up a reservation system. A year ago, and we've got a little bit of experience with that. We actually have, I think, 100 landowners or 100 parcels that are enrolled in that system, and we had really good success. There's probably about 100,000 acres in that program. A lot of support from landowners. They like knowing who's on their property. This allows them to do that. They get a portal into this this system so they know who's going to be on their property. We provide that to our enforcement folks, and so it has worked fairly well for the landowners. Some of the frustrations from the hunters, though, is that it's first come, first served. We don't have a way to do a drawing on some of the more popular parcels, and staying up until midnight and hitting the button 3 weeks before that parcel, or you want to hunt that parcel, is frustrating, I think, for a lot of folks. So we are looking to make some improvements on that, and I think you'll hear a little bit about that in our fee proposal to the legislature this year. In terms of wildlife conflict, we're completing that transition to the wildlife program from enforcement. And we're really trying to focus on improving customer satisfaction and targeting the management of conflicts so that it's consistent with our population objectives for whatever the critter is, the wildlife is. And so as part of that, we're looking at emphasizing proactive programs. A lot of our program in the past had been fairly reactive. It was the basis when we received a complaint, we would respond to it. We're trying to look at some of the chronic areas around the state where we've got problems and see if we can get in there and develop some preventative measures using non-lethal techniques, but also more permanent measures. And of course, exclusionary fencing is probably one of the more effective ways of preventing problems, and so those are the kinds of things that we're looking at employing on a grander scale. And then partnerships with others, whether that's we have a wildlife control operators program. We permit them through a training program to mostly it's for the trapping of nuisance animals. We're looking at expanding that to include other types of wildlife conflict. We work closely with USDA APHIS and looking to enhance our partnerships with them as well, but also even down to local animal control operators and things in cities and towns. So really looking to expand our partnerships with others so that we're making being as efficient and effective as we can. As you know, disease in wildlife is a big issue. Hoof disease, again, you talked about that and saw the presentation on that yesterday. But we still have a lot of others that are evident and prevalent in our wildlife populations. Hair slip for both black-tailed deer and mule deer, EHD, that's too long of a name for me to recite right now, but affects our white-tailed deer mainly periodically in eastern Washington. Pneumonia in sheep, and now we're beginning to have concerns about potentially pneumonia affecting mountain goats as well. And then several other diseases. We've expanded our work on parasites and disease issues in moose as well. There are concerns. There are some of the other Rocky Mountain states have experienced some problems with both parasites and diseases in moose, and so we're starting to evaluate that in Washington as well. Baiting of deer and elk, I'm not sure how, I guess that's pretty clear, but this is real. This is a site in Washington where a fellow brings in a semi-load of apples, distributes them so that he can keep, in this case, elk on his property for hunting, and it's kind of the poster child right now in terms of the greatest concerns that we've been hearing, but it really is a social call in terms of managing game species, and so we've brought this issue up before, and at least to date have not crafted a rule that has been well supported by the public, and so we're going to take another run at that the next three-year package, but really in terms of the game management plan, we recognize that we need to identify the specific concerns and areas of support that folks would like to see us deal with, and then try to draft a rule that's supported. Equipment, technology, and ethics. We talked with the Wildlife Committee last night a little bit about this, and it continues to be a big issue. Obviously, the sporting goods manufacturers are going to be continuing to develop and improve the technology used in hunting, and so a lot of the issues that we've been hearing about, and you heard this morning as well, are looking to looking to deal with that issue. And so we know that at least in the next 2-3 year packages, we'll certainly be dealing with additional debate on the ethics of some of the equipment technology that are out there. So those are some of the major issues. There's obviously, it's a big plan. There's a lot of stuff in it. But and I'm going to also just touch a little bit on what we heard from the public on some of those issues. We did receive well over 1,600 communications. Yeah, it's emails, surveys, survey completion on our website, but also letters. And within those 1,600 communications, many of them commented on a variety of issues, and so over 4,000 categories of comments. And I'll call it a data dump. We did download a lot of that, so you'd have it available in terms of what those comments were. As I mentioned earlier, we still have some work to do on finalizing that and organizing that a little better than it currently is. But you know, we went around the state and did a series of 6 public meetings, and I think the total was under 100 people attended those 6 public meetings. But you see that I think the way that people want to communicate with us has changed, and so we still get lots of people commenting, lots of people interacting with us, but not necessarily face-to-face in a public meeting. So again, the major issues that we received comments on are predator-prey, wolf management, retention and recruitment, non-toxic ammunition, hunter access, wildlife conflict, deer and elk in general, and bear and cougar in general. And both, a lot of the comments received for deer and elk in general and bear and cougar in general were also related to predator-prey management. So we heard everything from let nature take its course, predators won't overpopulate, they have to have available prey to sustain their populations. Predators have their own place in the ecosystem, they don't need management. Consider predator effects on trophy cascades before reducing their numbers. We also heard the other side, the guidelines are too restrictive, would not result in any actions being taken. You heard that this morning. If there were fewer predators, it'd be more prey for humans. We should be able to reduce predator numbers before prey numbers begin to decline. And you can't take humans out of the equation in terms of predator-prey management in the state of Washington with as many people as we have here. In terms of wolf management, wolves are not a game species and they don't belong in the game management plan. Fairly common theme. It's too early to be talking about a plan for managing wolves after they're delisted. It'll take a number of years for that to occur. Placing wolves in the game management plan indicates that WDFW plans to allow hunting. A plan for managing wolves after they reach recovery objective should have already been completed. So again, both sides of the issue. Given the controversy associated with wolves, starting a plan now makes sense. So we did get a lot of support for getting moving on that. Hunter recruitment and retention, a broad spectrum of responses to that as well. Some suspected that it was just a means to increase revenue to the department. Others suggested that we don't need hunting, just let nature take its course, consistent with the predator-prey discussion. If you want more hunters, then just increase the amount of game animals and hunter success. You heard this one this morning, lower the price of licenses and hunter numbers will increase. Increase the number of nature watchers, not hunters, and find other ways to support the department. Again, you heard that this morning as well. And then a lot of ideas and just that got into the details. So obviously in a game management plan, we stay at a pretty high level in terms of the objectives and strategies that we develop. But a lot of people want to help you and they want to get into the details. Okay, well, how would you implement that strategy or how would you deal with that objective? And so those were helpful, all helpful as well. Non-toxic ammunition, probably the number one comment that we heard was just eliminate it now. It's toxic, it kills and it poisons wildlife, and so rather than the more measured approach that we were suggesting, they just want us to deal with it quickly. A lot of folks provided examples of the toxicity of lead to wildlife and humans. On the other side, folks said, well, you know, we're fine with dealing with the issues that are real, but let's show that, that there's actually population level impacts to wildlife before we would begin to restrict its use. And a couple of different ways of saying the same thing. On hunter access, I think by far the greatest concern that we heard in terms of timeliness of when the plan was available for to the public is that a lot of fee access issues in Western Washington associated with timberlands, and a lot of suggestions on how to deal with that. But overall, just a lot of support, and again, detailed suggestions for how to implement a lot of that access strategies that, and objectives that we have in the plan. Wildlife conflict, again, one of the big issues was associated with bear damage, and I think that was in part related to the way that we had crafted the language of that objective, and concern that we weren't going to be dealing with the bear damage issues as we should be in their minds. But again, lots of suggestions for how to improve the conflict program, most of those well within the drafted objectives and strategies. And a lot of support for use of non-lethal measures. Doesn't matter what the species of conflict was, whether it's raccoons in your backyard or cougars in the more rural areas. In terms of elk and deer, just like I suggested at the beginning, a lot of concern about predation effects. That's a very common comment that we heard, a lot of concern about inability to manage predation and its impacts on deer and elk. Also a lot of support for improving the surveys and the population monitoring, as we've talked many, many times about, especially in Western Washington, very difficult to monitor elk and deer in Western Washington, and so a lot of concern about that, suggesting that at least collect something, some data, and obviously we do have several research projects going on to help us deal with that. Lots of comments related to hunting season regulations, which of course we take on in the three-year package rather than take on in the scheme management plan. But good comments. They all help us. And of course, hoof disease was a predominant comment. Bear and cougar, again, concerned about predator numbers and effects on prey. Support for considering prey population levels in managing predator population levels and recognizing the difficulty in doing that without good survey data, without the ability to survey some many species. That would require a fairly finite and detailed level of management that we're not capable of at this point in many ways. And then a lot of suggestions about expanding harvest on bears and cougars to benefit prey. And then, of course, liberalizing the regulations to provide better harvest. So in summary, a lot more work to be done in editing the plan based on the comments we received. We'll try to finish up the formal SEPA process, EI, Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement process, hopefully this month, but at least by into September. And then we would bring a final draft of the plan to the commission by the end of the year. And yes, this will end up with some overlap in the hunting season process, and we've been working both in educating ourselves as well as the public about the separation of those two processes, and so probably be some confusion associated with that. So any questions?
Commissioners, interesting. Thank you, Dave. I'll warm them up. Okay. The recruitment, retention, reactivation workshop, and working group. Mm-hmm. Do you have a youth leader on that group?
Actually, we do, and as it turns out, she is a member of your advisory group.
Okay, who's that?
I already forgot her name.
Okay.
The one who was here
at
the Moses Lake meeting.
Okay, yeah, thanks. And the other one is Okay, we've always wanted to find more available private lands for hunter access. We've been working on that, and it's never ending. Often what the landowners are concerned about is having people they don't know come onto their land. So what do we offer in terms of helping them manage the hunters once they're on their lands? Do we offer up support with our enforcement officers? And if so, how do we deal with the extra demand on enforcement?
So we've had active access programs in the state of Washington for a number of years, and at least for the last 20 years, we've had about 1 million acres enrolled in the program. And so it's a program that enforcement staff are very familiar with and help us prioritize their activities on the lands that are in our programs. But also we just have our field staff. So we've expanded our private land staff fairly significantly, and they're present on those properties as well. And if they encounter a violation, they've got direct contact with local officers and they've been working very well with coordinating with local officers on the needs of those landowners, and the officers know those landowners as well. And so it's very well coordinated, I think.
Director Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Dave, during our open public comment period, we heard some concerns about the amount of time that we've provided the public to provide comments back to us, particularly when we're asking for comments on a relatively large document with a number of elements to it. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So the process itself actually had, there was 30 days available for public comment. It's a standard time frame for a supplemental environmental impact statement. But it's, you know, always, I think, when we go out with a large document, we experience that concern. And so as a result of hearing that, we are slowing down our pace in terms of moving this forward. There'll be another draft of the plan developed and submitted to the commission, and while I haven't fleshed out exactly how the timing of that or how that would work, there will be a public comment process associated with that as well.
Thanks.
And it's not going to be at the September meeting. It's going to be...
I'm still not giving up on... I don't want to take my time off of the September meeting yet, but they probably do need to schedule some time on the November meeting. Because I think that we will at least give you an update and or potentially maybe even conduct another hearing at that point.
Okay, great. Commissioner King?
My comment too was on the timing, and it sounds like we're going to allow enough time. As you look through the comments and WFW's response and then try to relate it back to the what's in the plan now, it's mind-boggling. And I know the people that have spent a lot of time on these comments on both sides are trying to figure out were their comments incorporated somehow, so it's going to take some time.
Sure.
I'd also ask, I know there will probably be one more WAG meeting prior to adoption of this. Is there a plan to bring this plan to the WAG for a full review, or at least that seems like a logical place, and I don't know if that, you know, has one more shot at that.
Certainly the wolf section was worked fairly heavily with the wolf advisory group, and had a lot of discussions on that. Still not support necessarily from the environmental community on including wolves in this plan, even on the WAG. And so, but yes, we would revisit where we're at with them, certainly, and at our next meeting. And also there's a lot of interest as well on the Game Management Advisory Council to working through this. And so we've got a meeting with them set up for next Saturday, and we'll talk some more about the plan at that point. Okay. So lots of work still with our advisory groups and others in redrafting the plan.
That's really important because there are some just really at the heart of this whole issue comments that I'm reading here. And they just deserve more time and just a slow process. It just can't be rushed.
You bet.
I would also point, as you read this, there's there's, it looks like good science and fact from both sides of the issues on wolf management, wolf recovery. As an example, I think we need time for science to catch up too, eventually, you know, and that's why this inclusion of wolves in this document, I don't think of that I'm reading in any way, says you've predetermined an outcome. There's a lot of research going to come to play in this and have help people try to figure out the right relationships between prey, predators, endangered species as they recover. The Mule Deer Foundation in Okanagan County, our newly formed chapters, helping to sponsor a study by University of Washington in Okanagan County on the effects on mule deer fawn survival with coyotes or with wolves where coyotes typically have left the area. So just trying to get that all put together, you know, there's a lot of science that has to be brought to bear on this. So this is a long process we're into here, and I appreciate the work and allowing all the great comments, you know, to be fully vetted in different venues, I think is great.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You were talking about the poor attendance at these meetings, and I will admit that I get really busy during July, but generally our paper is really good about posting these. How well were they advertised, and how were they advertised, and how much lead time did people have to know that these public meetings were being held?
Good question. So we usually try to get the information out at least a couple of weeks before we conduct the public meetings. We have mostly an email list anymore of folks that want to be kept apprised of you know, what's going on, and they can even be specific about what kinds of issues they're interested in hearing about. And so I think there's 8,000 emails on that list. And then because it's game management plan, we also email the hunters that we have email addresses for, and there's about 100,000 of those. So we hit all of those, and we still ended up with less than 100 people at our meetings.
I guess someone who's being drugged, kicking and screaming into the computer age, I don't live on my computer. I still read papers.
And we did send out a news release as well. And you know how that goes. Probably in the rural communities, they carry those kinds of our news releases. But in a lot of cases, they don't. I know the Spokane paper had a lot of good coverage of the issue. Not sure about some of the more local papers.
I know our paper is generally really good about doing it, and I did not see anything. Okay. So, thank you.
I saw them in our paper. Other questions, comments? Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair. As the Chair of the Wildlife Committee, your surveys and the CEPA analysis really gives us some direction for the committee of areas that we should be studying. And the common thread that I saw from the public comments, as well as the public survey and CEPA comments, was the predator-prey issue. And I think that really begs that we re-examine both our data as well as our approach to predator-prey management. Included in what we do will be the need to look what other states are doing as well, especially our surrounding states. Just a personal issue that I'm interested in, and I think the committee members are, is hunter ethics, and that would include gear, baiting, perhaps even access. And then as we dig deeper, there are issues that upland game birds, turkey, and other things that will be of interest to the committee.
Anything else? Very good job. I'm very interested in the fair chase ethics side, and we talked about that a little bit. The evolution of technology is a constant, and it's always interesting to see the different viewpoints, and I think we would do well to generate a philosophy of our own, because we're going to get the push and pull from different sides. Some, I know often the hunters are absolutely split down the middle on some of these issues, so you can't look to them. Thanks very much. Good job. Okay, do we have public testimony? on this subject? Okay, we've got 10 people signed up. So once again, I'll call you up two at a time. You have your 3 minutes. When the beeping noise sounds, please conclude your remarks. Dave Duncan, Jack Field. Oh, wait, you signed up for the first one, right, Dave? You didn't sign up for this one? Okay, sorry, I got this one in there. Okay, Jack Fields. That's a story. Melinda Hirsch, did you want to testify on this one? Okay, sorry.
Excuse me, Madam. I think to Dave's, he's signed up on just one sheet on both items, both the item 11 and 12.
Oh, okay, I get you.
I signed up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jack Field again, and staff did a yeoman's job of trying to brief you on this brief, concise document. As you can tell, the members of the public have an immense interest in wolf management, both now and into the future, and it's very challenging, and as a WAG member, Commissioner Keeney had raised several questions about wolves. I would ask you to open to the table of contents and point to the wolf chapter. We can't have a discussion on wolves when it's not included. And as a WAG member, someone who's been involved in this scoping process from the very beginning, it's absolutely essential that we begin the discussion today. There's got to be a component. We've got to incorporate that into the game management plan. The concept of quality predator-prey management and managing wildlife in a holistic fashion for all the users, whether it be, and I'm going to say wildlife as a user or just in terms of the ecosystem component, it's absolutely essential. We can't do this in a vacuum. We can't afford to wait until 2021. By looking at the Molesky model, there's a very high likelihood we're going to be extremely close, if not approaching, the delisting target of 15 successful breeding pairs geographically distributed through the four recovery regions. With that being said, we can't afford to wait, gather more data, wait. I think we can look, there's 25 years of very good science in the Northern Rocky Mountain recovery region. The eastern third of Washington is incorporated into the NRM. It's absolutely essential that we incorporate that. It's also very important as we go forward that we continue to maintain a very strong message from the Commission, which you've done a wonderful job in urging the service to delist the western two-thirds of Washington so we can apply our plan equitably across the state. The challenge we run into right now is we can have the best plan, which I believe we have one of the best plans in the country for wolf management, but we can't fully utilize it and implement it across the entire state due to the restrictions of the ESA, which are out of our control at this time. The other challenge is we look to, we're very concerned, the Washington Cattlemen's Association and Sportsmen's Coalition are very concerned about the predator-prey component. We are extremely concerned in looking at the cougar issues as a prime example. I would beg to differ that when you go online, if you look at the conflict tab, virtually you can find one, if not one a day, at least 3 to 4 a week, cougar complaints. In many situations, those animals have been involved in depredations of pets or livestock. The department has done a wonderful job when contacted to respond, but I think it's important that we fully understand what's happening as we start to look now, look back 10 years. Did we see the same level of impact and response? Appreciate the opportunity, absolutely essential to incorporate wolves, and we'll look forward to continue the discussion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Heather Lowe, would you come forward? Ms. Hirsch?
Okay. Hi, it's Melinda Hirsch again, and good morning. When all of us would like to be at the beach, right? Anyway, I'd like to discuss the elephant in the room, and I find this somewhat distressing, and that is the continual attempt to get wolves labeled as game, and being game then for that therefore implies that they are going to be hunted. having them even listed in the game management plan I find offensive. I think we have good plans in place for the Wolves. I think they've been executed well. They're being executed well. We have plans for them in the future. I think the department has done a very good job with these things, but I really strongly object to having them put into a budget and called game. They're apex predators. We need them. And I guess that's all I have to say. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob McCoy, Ms. Lowe. Ready? Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Heather Lowe, and I'm from Seattle, Washington. And I monitor animal welfare issues around the globe and also in the United States. I'm really pleased. This is my first meeting of this type here. And that you are all handpicked by the governor, obviously, somebody thinks you're really smart, and somebody thinks you're worthy of sitting on this commission to make some very, very important things, decisions for the state of Washington. And I'm proud to live in this state because we tend to do things smarter. Along with California and Oregon, I think the West Coast can be considered enlightened from their sustainability and natural environment issues. And I'd like it that we would lead the country in how it should be done instead of following anything that another state might be doing. The lady left. I agree with her. The wolf issues are very complex, and Jay, thanks for bringing that up, because no one says don't address the issues of the wolf and delisting issues and what's going on in the state. What we're saying is keep it under the Endangered Species Act, where you spent 5 years of your time and the department's time and the public's time putting together a conservation and management plan. 5 years is a long time to think about that issue, and it's really well done. There are evolving issues that are coming up that need to be addressed to the point that the fellow, don't remember your name, but no one's saying don't look at the issues of the wolves and what's going to happen when we reach our goal. So just keep it out of the game management plan so they can be monitored as it deservedly should be under endangered species. I'm old enough to live through times where seatbelts were not required, and one of the greatest things that the United States did was to reduce fatalities by demanding and making it a law that you wear your seatbelt. And that's what I'm asking that we should be doing for the next 6 years with lead ammunition. We shouldn't say, oh, voluntarily, if you feel like doing it. We have to manage this, and humans have basically shown that, like texting, you need a law to set boundaries and to move us toward our goals. And so I'm asking that voluntary become mandatory as soon as possible. This is 6 years of a plan. And the third thing that I'd like to mention is the coyote killing. I think we are a more civilized state than deserves, and there should be laws within the game management plan prohibiting that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Diane Gagos? Okay. Mr. McCoy.
Hello, Bob McCoy from Sammamish, Washington. Regarding the cougar hunting, the department used 8 years of scientific study by the biologists in the department out of WSU and also University of Washington to come up with a plan to hold cougar hunts that would minimize social disruption in the cougar community, mountain lion community, and statistically it appears that should reduce the number of conflicts, human conflicts, problem cougars, etc. We're all pretty much aware of that. So, but in the past two hunting seasons, where the guidelines have been in effect, a total of 12 PMUs in the 2 years, 7 in the first, and five population management units in the second hunting season, were allowed to go over their guidelines of 12 to 16%, and in some cases very significantly over. We're talking about very small numbers nonetheless, but we're talking about a wide-ranging, low-density animal. Several PMUs have no guidelines associated with them, specifically 1722. My handout has a darkened area that shows that it's pretty much in the southeastern part of the state. By the calculations of the department's biologists, the harvest in that area, or the number of cats that could that meet harvest guidelines, are 20, is about 48 cats, and they've taken 25 out of that PMU. So they're taking cats at 48% of the population 2 years in a row, and we know that's not sustainable. The 12 to 16% is already maximum sustained yield. So I'd like to see us actually buckle that down. I think originally it was thought there weren't many cats in there, but we're taking half of them out, so that's not good. Post-listing wolf management's been hit on pretty well. I agree that right now we don't know what's going to happen in, let's say, the next 4 years. I've spoken to stochastic events to this commission previously on different issues, and certainly as a believer in warming, I still didn't suspect that we would have such big fires this soon, and we don't know what it's going to do to the predator-prey dynamics. Thank you.
Rebecca Wolf. Okay. Ms. Gallegos.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, and staff. My name is Diane Gallegos with Wolf Haven International. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on the proposed game management plan. I have suggestions in three areas for your consideration. First, Objective 4, which is specific to wolves, seems inappropriate in a plan that's stated purpose is to address management of hunted game species. Wolves are a non-game, non-hunted endangered species, and no public process has yet taken place to inform how wolves should be designated after recovery. Under current Washington law, potential designations include protected, game animal, or unclassified. Language has been added to the draft plan stating that it is not presupposing an outcome of a public process that has not yet taken place, yet it still includes population objectives and management units as a topic, which gives the appearance of an already determined outcome. I recommend deleting this section or making it more ambiguous for multiple outcomes concerning the status of wolves upon delisting. If necessary, lethal removal provisions are already provided for in the current Washington Gray Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. Second, the game management plan does not address the coyote killing contest the state currently allows, and I believe it should. I still have not been given information on how these contests are beneficial to wildlife, and in my opinion, they do not represent ethical wildlife management or ethical outdoor recreation practices in the 21st century. They reflect badly on the department, do not reflect good science, and in the excitement of a contest can endanger wolves which may be mistaken for coyotes and shot. Third, I believe the department should work with the legislature to ban lead ammunition. Lead will not lose toxicity over time. It continues to pollute the environment and can be hazardous to human health. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Genevieve Schumacher. Okay, Mr. Wolf.
Go ahead. Thank you. Okay, thank you. I'm Rebecca Wolf from Edmonds, Washington, formerly of Spokane, where I lived for about 13 years, and before that, Pendleton, Oregon. So I know hunting country very well. Grew up in a family of men who hunted. And today I represent myself, but also the Washington State Chapter of the Sierra Club. And we are members on the WAG, and I serve as the alternate to my colleague, Bob Agutter. So my career has been in education, and I guess I want to start with that. I think that the department needs to do much, much more in the area of educating people about wolves and cougars and how wolves help manage cougars. And so when you try to remove wolves, you are hurting, you're promoting more coyotes. I'm sorry. So wolves help manage coyotes. And I think that some people might not understand that. And so they're trying to reduce the coyotes and the wolves. And that's just counterproductive. And I think we need much more education about that. Sometimes, and I mean no offense here, but sometimes it seems like this is the Washington State Department of Hunting. And I just want people to really think about your mission, your mandate, and thank you for putting it into the executive summary to the staff. Thank them. And it says you shall preserve, protect, perpetuate, and manage the wildlife. And then it goes on to talk about promoting more recreation. I just want to remind you that most of the people in this state enjoy different kinds of recreation in wildlife, in the wildlands and in the forests. And it's not all about hunting. So, and I know that some percentage of your funding comes from hunting and tags and licenses and all that. But I just want to stress that. And it's not an anti-hunting message. It's just that I think the balance has shifted way too much toward the hunters versus the wildlife. And my point of view, and I think the point of view of many of my colleagues in the Sierra Club, is that wildlife is part of the commons. It's not just property. It's part of the commons that we all own together as citizens of this state. And it says that it's, that wildlife is property of the state, but who's the state? We are. So all the people. And we know from surveys that about 75% of the people support wolf recovery. And as a researcher, former researcher really, I want to stress that I think the framing and the stating of the questions in some of the surveys has been really leaning toward promoting the idea that wolves should be considered as game animals, and that they will be, and that they will be hunted. And I think the department is really capable of dealing with any problem wolves in many other ways other than through hunting. So thank you very much for your time, and I will watch the TV production and try to put my comments on paper and send them to you. Okay?
Thank you
very much.
Amanda Verona and Ms. Schumacher.
Hi, my name's Genevieve Schumacher. I'm from Lake Forest Park. I'm an educator, a mom, a wildlife advocate, and I'm representing myself and also the National Wolf Watcher Coalition. I'm here to speak for the wolves and to specifically ask them all the objectives related to the wolves and the game management plan be removed. As an educator, this last few years, I've had the joy of teaching kids about wolves in our state. I'm trying to teach them to be future stewards, conservationists, and that has brought a lot of joy to our school. I've enjoyed working with Wolf Haven International, with Diane Gallo's program, and I want to have our kids have the opportunity to have these wolves in our landscape. When I heard the gentleman speak about Eastern Washington, I know that Conservation Northwest has been successful in working with you and providing range riders for ranchers, and I hope that that's a program that we can continue to have and have positive impact, so that hunting and other management isn't needed as much. Thank you.
Thank you. Harold Oster.
Okay, Ms. Verona. Hi, my name is Mandy Verona. I live in Seattle, and I'm a little nervous, so I'll rely on my notes. I have had a conversation with Dave Ware on the phone and have emailed him, and I didn't receive notice of the hearing at which he said there were fewer than 100 people, so I think they need to get the word out in a more effective way, because I try to keep on top of these. And I just want to start my comments by saying Garrison Keillor said recently that wolves look a lot like dogs, and we Americans sure love our dogs. And I haven't talked to anybody who's heard a wolf howl in the wild that hasn't been profoundly affected, and I haven't had that opportunity yet, and I hope I will. And wolves are a symbol of the West, and even still, they're under pressure and under fire, and sometimes hated and resented. And ranchers and hunters don't seem to be all that willing to coexist with them, so they really need our protection. They're hated for doing what God intended them to do, which is to prey on elk and deer, and they keep the ecosystem in balance. Some states, I think, are off the rails in their wolf management. I mean, they have hunting and killing contests and trapping, and they allow dogs, and killing by the most brutal means necessary. So I think Washington State could lead the nation in humane and responsible management of wolves. And when I say management, I don't mean management as Washington State seems to use that word. I mean a real responsible, humane management and protection of wolves, because we're stewards of the land and they really need our help. And I also think that they could be a money maker for Washington if people knew that they could come to parts of the state and watch them and view them. So I'm just here to ask you all to do everything you can to protect these beautiful creatures. And thank you very much for holding this hearing.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hoste.
Holste.
Holste.
Madam Chairperson, Commission members, Director Anderson, Deputy Director Starr. I live in Pierce County. We talked about game management. This is game management 62. I have 80-plus elk living south and east of my place, and they cause me tree and fence damage. Have any of you ever seen 20 to 40 head of elk leave a field and run through a fence? It's not pretty. The elk population was controlled prior to 1988 when the department allowed a liberal season. Enumclaw area was, and the Issaquah area, Puyallup area, are now highly developed metropolitan areas. A lot of you live in other parts of the state. There's a lot of gas stations, schoolyards, housing developments there. And this elk damage is still prevalent. It's been a long history. It didn't just start in April. The 1998, the three-point bull regulation was enacted with very few limited antlerless harvest for modern firearms. You can't take 10 damage hunt permits and try to control 250 elk, which are going to produce 125 elk each year. You have to have more than that or a liberal season. And I guess what kind of data does the department have to support not allowing a late archery season in a damaged area to harvest those elk, or not allow antlerless elk to be harvested with muzzleloaders in that damaged area? This is private farmland. It's not state and federal where these elk are going to migrate to it. There are no public viewing areas there. There's no wide spots in the road where the public can stop and look at these elk as they run through a fence or damage these crops. To speak a little bit about non-toxic shot, there's no scientific data to really say that all wildlife is being affected by it except for waterfowl and condors. You're going to have more raptors killed with your wind machines in eastern Washington than you will have by one of them picking up a dead pheasant and eating a lead pellet. You want to restrict the landowner from going out in his backyard on Thanksgiving Day and picking up his shotgun and go shoot a pheasant one day a year and make him buy a steel shotgun, different shot, more expensive equipment. I should probably comment about the wolves since nobody else has supported them in the hunting portion of it. Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho all have done studies. They found wolves do eat meat. Not just deer and elk, cattle, sheep, llamas, and other things. People want to see them, but they don't want them in their property. They want to see them on the neighbor's property. They want to hear them someplace else. Wolves eat at night. Can't see them in the nighttime.
Thank you. That concludes the hearing on the game management plan. Thank you all for your comments. We did take notes, listen carefully, appreciate your viewpoints.